Blog Talk Radio.
Gotta skip this. Hold on a second. We gotta skip something. There's something I want to play, and I wanted to open it up, and I forgot they do ads first. So just hold on a second here. Brendan and I can talk.
We're getting there.
Good morning, Brendan. Here we go.
Good morning.
Here we go. We're coming up. We're coming up on it. Okay. This is how we're starting the show. Okay. Boom.
Disqualified. This is calculated, deliberate, premeditated misconduct, followed by a cover-up that included false statements and lies to Congress, the media, and the American people. In my administration, I'm going to enforce all laws concerning the protection of classified information. We also need the best protection of classified information. That is the worst situation. Hillary's private email scandal, which put unclassified information in the reach of our enemies, disqualifies her from the presidency. Service members here in North Carolina have risked their lives to acquire classified intelligence to protect our country. Hillary thought nothing of putting classified information on her illegal server, which our enemies now have hacked.
Forget about what was on the emails. It's irrelevant. Although many of them were classified, highly classified, and you go to jail for that.
Hello, Donald. How are you this morning? Everything okay? All I can say is out of the mouths of babes. Okay? I want you to replay those words over and over again. Seriously. I mean, I don't want to hear from Jim Jordan saying, oh, well, Hillary's emails were so egregious. What the president did is not egregious. First of all, he's not the president. I wish you would stop calling him the president. He is not the president. He's the former guy. And he steals classified information and runs off to Mar-a-Lago, not to mention probably things that belong to the federal government that he should not have stolen. You know, like the letters from Kim Jong-un saying, I love you. And all the things that go with it, and maybe some gifts that he took. But he did this on his own because his people were told, don't touch the boxes. He was seen going through documents, throwing some away, probably down the toilet, some of them being, you know, ripped up, burn bags being sent out. And the things that he wanted went into the boxes. Classified information that you're not entitled to. Don't say they're yours because you're not entitled to them anymore. You only know what the president of the United States, whose name is Joe Biden, wants you to know. You're not entitled to have classified information unless he tells you you can have it. And from what we understand, he didn't tell you to take boxes of classified information with you. From your mouth to God's ears. It's criminal. It should be investigated. People go to jail for that. And don't claim you didn't know that, because you did, because you talked about it 5 years ago. Of course, then again, maybe you forgot. You know, probably don't even remember the name of your grandchildren. But be that as it may, that's how I wanted to start out tonight. I wanted to make fun of him. Good morning, Brendan. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. I'm doing great. Thank you for asking.
Okay, this is the Constitution today. Brendan Berry and myself, Jeffrey Swartz, we are both professors of law at WMU Cooley Law School at their Tampa Bay campus. And I have to tell you that the things that Brendan and I say here are our thoughts and only our thoughts. They're our opinions. They are not necessarily the opinions of the administration of WMU Cooley Law School, its faculty, either at large or individually. And again, good morning, Brendan. What's on your mind today, Brendan?
Well, there's all kinds of stuff on my mind, but I think you started with a good one. You know, I'm still trying to figure out, you know, we've talked about this before, but a couple of different issues that, you know, with regard to Hillary, you mentioned Hillary's, or Donald Trump, of course, was raging about Hillary's emails. I'm still trying to figure out what that scandal was.
You saw her new hat, didn't you?
I heard about it. What does it say again? Yeah.
It says, but her emails.
Right. Right. Right.
Okay. That's the new hat she's wearing. But her emails.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And you heard it over and over again. We've talked about this, too. I mean, that was the reason a lot of people sat out the 2016 election. And we've talked about this. I was beating my head against the wall, you know, trying to tell people, look, you know, you're saying, never mind. They're all the same. They're both the same. You know, who cares, Trump or Hillary? Her emails. Okay, what I don't know what about her emails, but that's the reason we have the Supreme Court we have now, is because people bought that buzzword. There was no substance to it. I never heard. Right. That, you know, what exactly, what specifically was it about her emails that was so, that was so controversial? I mean, from all we know, the only things that ever got deleted from her email account were things about, like, what, Chelsea's birthday party and, you know, stuff like that. So,
it was her wedding, not her birthday party, but it's close enough.
Her wedding, okay. Yeah, good. Yeah, one of those things. One of those special occasions. And
I don't think she was having birthday parties with clowns at that point.
Yeah, right. No, we were much more sophisticated. We were up to floral arrangements, right? Not clowns. But they're quite expert at this. They did the same thing with Benghazi. These things just turn into buzzwords. You know, they don't even know what they're talking about. Now it's critical race theory, right? You go ask a Republican, you know, what do you think of critical race theory? Oh, it's awful. They shouldn't be teaching that in our schools. Well, where are they teaching it? I don't know. Well, what is it? Well, I don't know. But it's a buzzword. So I never understood what was up with that. But here with Donald Trump, I understand. I understand exactly what he did. He took boxes of documents out of the White House down to Mar-a-Lago. See, there's actually meat on these bones, right? I mean, you can get your mind around this. And apparently some of them were classified.
Some of them are eyes only.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what people don't realize, that top secret is not the highest classification. The highest classification is eyes only. Eyes of the president, that's what it means, and whoever he chooses to give it to. And he's got, apparently there are some very, very serious documents there. Some of them may have been, who knows? I mean, the CIA does assessments of a lot of the things that the president does. To the same extent, it could very well be that there are assessments of him or policies that he has incorporated or plans to incorporate that the CIA came up with intelligence, said, don't do that. And he did it anyway. It turned out bad. So, you know, we'll have to see what was there. But I happen to agree with the National Archivist. This has to be investigated by the Justice Department. This is not something, again, that Merrick Garland can dance around. He clearly knew that he was not supposed to destroy documents. He was told over and over again. People were following him around the White House, going into the trash as he was throwing things away. His main advisors were saying, you can't do that. This is not your private business. You can't do that. And he kept doing it anyway, which is probably why he started using the toilet, because people told him he couldn't do it. So he took the documents up to the residence, and he started cutting them up and flushing them down a toilet. Now we've come to find that he was doing things like, I'm avoiding the call sheets that keep track of everybody the president talks to, by using my cell phone, but now they might look to my cell phone, so I'm using other people's cell phones to make my calls for 4.5 hours while the Capitol was under siege. And how do we know he was talking to other people? The other people have said they were talking to him, like Jim Jordan, like Kevin McCarthy, like Mike Pence. Those people, or Pence's people, were calling him and he was refusing to talk to them, or he was talking to them on other people's cell phones. And they were avoiding the White House operators because the White House operators have to keep track of every call that comes in. Any call that comes for the president, they must log, even if he doesn't take it. But somehow, though, these logs, these call sheets, are nowhere to be found for 4 hours. And at one point, Donald says, you only destroy things if you have something to hide. Okay, here's my question. What are you hiding? Why are you destroying documents? I mean, it's like the Germans at the end of World War II were destroying all their documents and throwing them into fires. And you know, he just is throwing things away. Things that would expose just how either stupid he was or just how crooked he was or the things that he was trying to accomplish. Was he trying to get rid of all of the written evidence? And he doesn't leave a paper trail, by the way. That's why he destroys documents. He doesn't like paper trails. Was he trying to hide his involvement in a coup d'etat? I guess we're going to have to find out. But this is the guy people still want back in the White House. These are the people who want freedom, and they want the government off their back, and they want to know everything the government's doing, except for Donald. You do whatever you want to do. So something's got to change.
Yeah.
I mean, he can't keep the documents. Presidential Records Act of 1978 says so. He's not entitled to a security briefing, national security briefing, excuse me, unless the President of the United States orders it and permits it. The unfortunate thing is that the Presidential Records Act really doesn't have any teeth to it itself. So they're going to have to use things like 18 U.S.C. 371, which is a conspiracy to defraud the government by violating the Presidential Records Act, as being the basis that they go after him. He had no right to declassify anything. He wasn't president anymore. And none of the documents, and a lot of the documents which are marked classified, apparently had not been declassified. So it's going to be fun to see what happens to him. This is as egregious as it gets. So, but that's okay. Yeah. He's got a lot of other things to worry about. This is probably low on the totem pole for him. Apparently, he still has more. The archives are still trying to get more from him.
Mm-hmm.
He gave over what he wanted to give over. What didn't he give over?
Yeah, right.
And the people at Mar-a-Lago have been told by the head of staff, don't touch the boxes. Don't open the boxes. Because you will have seen classified information you're not entitled to, and the President of the United States would then be responsible for that. Don't open the boxes. So if anything else is destroyed, Donald had to do it himself. Can you see that? He spends his days playing golf, and then he comes home and says, oh, let's spend a couple of hours destroying documents. Okay. Can you see it? I'll take my shower later. Okay. With the first stack, 75 docs. Okay, I'll go through them. 75 docs. Throw them away. Burn them. Okay. I can, you know, it's sounding like Bullwinkle, right? Hey, don't know my own strength. I know people don't even remember Bullwinkle. That's okay. Okay. Hey, Rocky, watch me pull a classified document out of my hat. Okay. Oops, don't know my own strength.
I don't know where you come up with this stuff.
It's a stream of thought. Okay.
Yeah.
It just keeps coming. Okay. Yeah. So be that as it may, that's Donald. Your life is getting so miserable. Okay. You won't even be able to find an accountant anymore. He's going to end up with TurboTax. Mm. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because there is not, and even then, probably the guys, you know, the people that say you get a live tax expert, those people won't even come on the line for him. You're stuck with the computer, pal. Just input your information. Okay?
Right.
You know, like Swartz does. Okay, he sits there for two hours, right. Inputs his information, it prints out a return, I pay the bill, that's it, I'm done, okay? All right. Okay, I can just see, oh, wait a minute, forgot, don't know my own strength, got to go through this, got to put this on, got to put this in. Okay, whoops, okay. I can just imagine him and his idiot sons, okay, and Ivana, okay, sitting around doing their tax returns on TurboTax. I mean, seriously. Because there isn't an accountant that's going to touch him. When Mazars drops you, it says 10 years worth of their statements are not worth the paper they're written on because it's a matter of the input of the information they receive. Remember, they say, these are the accounting principles, and they have two pages at the end of every single one of these accounts. If you've ever had one of these done or ever observed them, there's two pages at the end of all these disclaimers. You know, we did them according to accounting principles based on the information we were furnished. You know, we don't vouch for the information that we were furnished, blah, 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 blah. Sounds like, you know, WMU Cooley doesn't necessarily endorse what we're saying. Okay, you know, that kind of disclaimer, right? Okay. And they read those things, okay. And Trump today said, put out a statement saying, well, they did it with accounting principles, which should end the investigation. Yeah, no, okay, okay. It wasn't an audit. That's not the way it works. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Okay. So he says he's been cleared, sort of like the Mueller investigation cleared him of everything, right? Now
yeah, right.
Mazars getting off of it, cleared him of everything. They didn't read the last two pages of disclaimers, right? And so when Mazars comes out there and says, our client is a liar, okay, the numbers he gives us aren't worth the paper they're written on. In fact, you should use the paper, you know, when you run out of toilet paper, use this because that's all these papers are worth, okay, what you leave on the papers, okay, and as a result of which, we're done with you. Mazars says no to probably a multi-million dollar account. They got to make $10 million a year off of this guy. And they're saying, we don't want your $10 million anymore. We're in a conflict of interest because we're handing your ass up. That's what they said. They said, we have a conflict of interest. So the only conflict of interest can be is I'm cooperating with the state of New York, and I'm handing you up, and I'm going to hang you by your thumbs, and they're going to kick out the stool, okay? And so who's going to touch him? You think Deloitte Touche would go anywhere near these guys? Hell, my accountants in Toledo, Ohio, that handled my stuff for years wouldn't touch these guys, this guy. And there's just four accountants working in a firm. Okay? Four Jewish guys I know, Sid and Sam. Okay? They sit there with their little green visors, and they do my tax returns. Okay? But they're all dead now, but that's beside the point. And so, you know, I'm sorry, but no one's going to touch him except for some guy on 41st Street on a third floor walk-up, okay, who's got the green visor and a woman who's 80 years old answering his phones, okay, and he charges you $250 to do your 1090, okay? And they're going to hand him 150,000 boxes. Here, fix this for me. Okay, for $100 an hour. Okay, and I'm not even going to pay you, but I'll tell you, I'm going to pay you $100 an hour. Fix this for me. You're my new accounting expert. Okay, that's what he's going to end up with. And Murray's going to go home that night and say, Shiley, you wouldn't believe what happened today. Okay. Donald Trump walked in my office, okay? Okay. West Medina, okay? oh, my God, it's a Larry David skit. It's got to be a Larry David skit.
Mm-hmm.
That's, his life is just going to be, his life is just so collapsing around him, and he doesn't care. He doesn't care. So be that as it may. I got another clip I want to play, if you don't mind, and then we'll just have a little fun with this. Okay, hold on a second.
Sure.
I got to play this. All right. Okay, hold on. Oh, the sound got turned off. Hold on. Hold on. I screwed it up.
Yes.
Never been a big fan.
You know what? Has anyone ever told you look exactly like Al Pacino? You know, stand-up woman. Hoo-ah! Hoo-ah!
Very good. Very good. Not good for you.
That's my message to Marjorie Taylor Greene. No soup for you. Okay. No soup
You're the
for
gazpacho?
You.
Okay. You're the gazpacho.
Yeah,
police?
Just, yeah, the gazpacho police. Yes. Okay. No soup for you. Okay. Okay. No soup for you. Okay. I mean, seriously, the gazpacho police. I mean, does she realize gazpacho is a cold soup? I mean. The gazpacho police. I'm sorry. And they wonder why they call her stupid. Okay? Okay, she wonders why. Why do they call me stupid? I don't understand. Okay? it's an absolutely perfect Saturday Night Live skit. Okay? Okay? And she comes in and asks for gazpacho, and they just go, no soup for you. Okay, actually, it would be perfect. Okay. Marjorie, stop trying to be Jewish. Okay, I know you don't want to be. Stop trying to sound like you're Jewish. Okay, you're not a member of the tribe. Okay, it's not there. Okay, so you know that gazpacho. I mean, it just really, literally, just shows how stupid she is, and it's. It's kind of funny because what we have here, and here's the serious part of this, is that, you know, there was a phrase, I know nothing, okay?
Yes, Sergeant
was
Schultz.
The response, yeah, right, was the response of members of a group called the Order of the Star-Spangled Banner, okay, which was founded in 1849. They were anti-immigrant, anti-Catholic. And they evolved in what we now know as the American Party. But it will always be remembered for another name, the Know-Nothings. They became a powerful political force, and they demanded allegiance of their more than 100 members in Congress in the 1850s, sort of like this guy out of Virginia who demanded allegiance to his tax pledge. I forgot his name now. Marjorie Taylor Greene lashed out at Nancy Pelosi, falsely accusing her of having the gazpacho police spying on members of Congress. Apparently mistaking a cold vegetable soup from Spain for Gestapo, which was from the Nazi secret police. This botched reference was widely mocked on. Yeah. This reference was mocked on social media, and Green later made fun of herself by tweeting, no soup for those who illegally spy on members of Congress. That's what she meant. Okay. If you spy on us, if you don't agree with us, you don't get any soup tonight. I mean, okay, but I want more. You want more? What is this, Oliver Twist? I mean, it is just so absurd that it literally shows not that she's pretending she knows nothing. She literally doesn't know anything. She knows nothing. So Marjorie, I'm going to send you a case of Campbell's gazpacho soup because I want to make sure that you get your gazpacho. Okay. Okay, I'm literally going to order a case of gazpacho soup and send it to her office. Not that I'd be the first. She's probably got cases and cases of it that have been delivered by liberal people like me. But I'm going to make sure you get all the soup you want. Okay, and there's a part of me that hopes you drown in it. But that's beside the point. okay? Maybe you could take a gazpacho bath. You know, you've heard of taking, you know, mud baths and things like that. Maybe she can pour it all into a bathtub and get all the vegetables and everything all around her and the tomatoes and everything, and she can, you know, take a gazpacho bath. I you know, soup bath. I don't know. I've just had too much fun with this. I'm sorry. I just have had too much fun with this. So I'm just going to let it go. If you guys got something to say, you can add anything you want to, okay?
I don't know how I can top that. God.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. I just we've had not see, we've killed off all this time having so much fun that we haven't talked about anything serious. Okay. So, you know, you haven't got it yet. You haven't had a chance to say what you really think. What do you really think?
Oh, jeez. Well, you know the interesting thing is we actually are talking about things that are serious, but they're so unbelievable that you wouldn't think it's serious, right? You would say that has got to be, you know. I always say about Donald Trump and modern day Republicans and everything that's going on, you know, nobody would buy this book. It's just not credible. You know, there's no that couldn't happen, but yeah, it happened. A member of the United States Congress actually said gazpacho police. So, I mean, you know, you can't make this stuff up. It's,
Rand Paul coming out and saying, I want them to bring the truckers, the trucker demonstration to the United States. I want them to go to the George Washington Bridge and block that bridge, okay? I mean, seriously. Now, the truckers in Canada were avowed insurrectionists. They said, we're trying to overthrow the Canadian government. They made that abundantly clear. So now Rand Paul is saying, I'm in favor of insurrection. The unspoken thing. I'm in favor of insurrection. And he, can you imagine? This is really good for Republicans. We're going to stop ordinary people from getting to work. We're going to stop products from getting to small shops so that they can stay in business. We're going to prevent people from coming in as tourists. We're going to shut the city of New York down. Can you think of anything more brilliant other than a Guinness? I mean, seriously. And he thinks that's going to get him more voters.
Mm-hmm.
But it does turn down the grifter machine. Those people who think like that will send him money now.
Yeah.
This is serious. These people are actually saying things like this, and it's become, it's almost like we've got leather skin now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what Rand Paul said. Next.
Yeah, right.
And the people of Kentucky reelect him. They still want him to be their senator. I don't understand. He's an eye doctor, and I wouldn't let him come within 100 yards of my eyes. And I keep repeating it. Where is Rand Paul's neighbor when we really need him? We really need you. Why did you disappear? Okay. Honestly, okay? Where are you? I feel like I'm yelling into a cannon. A canyon, I mean.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Oh, God.
Okay. One of the serious things we were going to talk about was Madison Cawthorn,
mm-hmm.
if you recall correctly. You remember him?
I remember him.
Okay. You remember what we're going to talk about?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. All right. I'll just set it up, and then I'm going to let you go to town on this one. Madison Cawthorn is a, in case you don't know, is a congressman from the state of North Carolina. Many of the things that he has said about himself, how he ended up in a wheelchair, all the things that he did during the course of his life, have turned out to be just fabricated. But he has embraced the former guy's claims that they 2020 election was stolen. And so there is a group of people who are with the North Carolina, say that, who are with the North Carolina elections boards, who want to have him disqualified to run for office. And what they're using is a lawsuit that they filed against him to have him declared an insurrectionist under the 14th Amendment. So why don't you go from that point, Brendan?
Yeah, that's and I wouldn't think that he'd be the only one. I mean, it's what I really hope that the January 6th commission uncovers, in addition to what Donald Trump was up to, is what members of Congress were up to, including, yeah, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Jim Jordan, all of them. How much did they know? How much did they coordinate with the Oath Keepers? How much did they coordinate, you know, with Donald Trump and his people? How much did they coordinate with Rudy Giuliani? Boy, we'll still have to talk about Rudy today. But with regard to all those people who participated in an attempted overthrow, you know, this guy East, you know, who drafted the memo, this lawyer
Eastman,
who drafted the memo.
John Eastman.
All these people have participated. And again, including elected officials of the U.S. government, participated in an attempted coup. And I'm tired of hearing the media, by the way, constantly waffling on this. And so you're calling it a riot or disorder or something. No, it was an insurrection. It was an attempted coup, and it was violent. The 14th Amendment, which was a post-Civil War amendment, you know, it's the effective date of the 14th Amendment is 1868. That's when it was ratified. So that, you know, it was drafted in response to the inputs that caused the Civil War. That's where we get the Equal Protection Clause and due process applying to the states and all that good stuff. And part of the 14th Amendment says that if you were part of an insurrection, not just were, but are. If you are part of an insurrection against the United States, you're disqualified from holding office under the United States. Which is why Donald Trump should be disqualified from ever running again. And yes, any member of Congress who has participated in this should be disqualified from holding office. Now, I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, one of the big questions is what's the appropriate remedy, right? How does one get oneself tagged as an insurrectionist? And of course, you know, one argument is that courts ought to do it, and so thus the lawsuits, right? If you can make a showing that somebody participated in an insurrection, then an Article III judge should hold that is a what we call a justiciable question, that it is suitable for a court of law to make that determination, and if a court does make that determination, that he should be disqualified, he among others should be disqualified. So it's going to be interesting to see how courts handle that.
Right.
But you know, there's a clear rule right in the Constitution that supports it, and it's up to judges. You know, under I hate to bore everybody to death, but if you've heard of Marbury versus Madison.
Yeah.
It's up to judges to apply the law, right? And that's the law.
Right.
So we'll see what they do with it. But
the people in North Carolina. First of all, this got started by some voters in his district who don't want to see him run again. Apparently, he's tried to get the case dismissed, but that's not going to happen. Under North Carolina law, the next step for the state election board would be to put together a panel to hear the dispute. Cawthorn would then have to prove they would not have to prove that he is an insurrectionist. He would have to prove that he isn't. So if a court finds that he is an insurrectionist, as defined under the 14th Amendment, or whatever different definition you're going to use, then he would have to go to the elections board, because now he's been disqualified. There's been a finding he's an insurrectionist. In order for him to get on the North Carolina ballot, he would have to go to the state elections board and prove that he isn't. Now, that decision could be overturned by an appellate court, state appellate court. But he might be in litigation and disqualified before the primary's over. That's how long this could last. And the truth is that in North Carolina, there was a law professor who basically said it'll be hard for him to get a judge that's going to hear his way, because this stuff has been kicking around about him since before he got into Congress. Not that he was an insurrectionist, but that he was unqualified. And there's a lot of people who wanted to be rid of him. And now they've found a mechanism for it, the 14th Amendment. And it's the same thing that would allow Congress to declare that Donald Trump is an insurrectionist, and he would have to go to court and prove he's not. So Congress passed a proclamation that Donald Trump is an insurrectionist and is unqualified to run for president, which they could do, impeached or not. He would have to go to court and prove that he's not. The burden would not be on Congress. The burden would be on Donald. Lots of luck with that one. Because the standard is probably a preponderance of the evidence. I don't know that. I'm just, you know, guessing. But if it's a preponderance of the evidence, the preponderance of the evidence clearly shows that he is. And Mo Brooks is. And Jim Jordan is. Rand Paul is. How about our friend Senator Cruz in Texas? How about Ron Johnson from Wisconsin? How about Boebert? How about Taylor Greene? How about Gohmert? How about Gosar? You get a declaration that they are insurrectionists, the burden is on them to prove that they're not. This would be a very interesting process if that were to happen. But her emails, it's going to be our call sign for everybody. But her email.
Yeah, all right.
But then Gandhi, right. Okay? I want to see Donald do sit 14 hours sitting in a chair and really answering questions.
Mm-hmm.
Not talking about how wonderful he is. Or how the election was stolen. But actually answering questions. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about like Hillary did, right? About the Benghazi
exactly,
hearing.
Like Hillary
right.
did. Exactly yeah. like Hillary did. Mm-hmm. So by the way, you were mentioning John Eastman. A shout out to Chapman University School of Law, where he was a professor. As mm-hmm. soon as the you-know-what hit the fan involving Mr. Eastman, they immediately asked for his immediate resignation.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted nothing more to do with him. And for all intents and purposes, they wanted nothing more to do with the Federalist Society. And it amazes me that the Federalist Society has not asked for his resignation. You really want to know. You who stand up for the Constitution, why haven't you asked for his resignation? I'm waiting to hear anything from the Federalist Society handing him up. But unfortunately, you know, for whatever the reasons are, he is still listed. Now, when you go to Eastman's Wikipedia page, his connection with Chapman University has been deleted off of his Wikipedia page. That's how thoroughly they don't even want him mentioning their name. That's like going off to school and coming home and finding out your parents moved and didn't tell you where they were going.
Mm-hmm.
okay? Little sign that says, go to grandma's house. I mean, you know, seriously. Bubby will feed you, okay? I mean, okay. And we sent your clothes to Bubby. She'll take care of you, okay? But, I mean, seriously, I mean, that really is, like, really coming home and finding out everybody moved. Bye. Bye. So he's still withholding 11,000 documents that are on Chapman's on his email account with Chapman University, which surprises me that Chapman hasn't voluntarily given all of those over. He claims that they're privileged documents because I was the president's lawyer and my communications are privileged. Well, here's a flash for you. Okay, you're a lawyer, but I'll give you a flash anyway. There's no attorney-client privilege between an attorney and a client who commit or plan to commit a crime.
Mm-hmm.
So if those emails are related to your attempted coup, I'm sorry, that's a crime. That's a conspiracy against the United States, and you don't have a privilege, so turn them over. The personal ones, you know, like the one who, you know, he sends to his wife saying, I just got fired, okay, or things like that, you know. That's okay. You can keep those. We already know you got fired. But he's got to turn the rest of it over. And I don't know when that's going to happen. So.
Yeah. And, you know, the funny All thing right. is if those emails have anything damaging in them, Donald Trump would be the first one to say, oh, he wasn't my lawyer, right? I mean, everybody's his lawyer until he doesn't want them to be his lawyer anymore. Then, I don't know. John Eastman,
yeah,
I don't know who
yeah,
John Eastman. Never heard of him.
What's a John Eastman? I never heard of it. Well, who is he? John Eastman? Huh? Who? I don't even know who this guy is.
Yeah.
Well, he was sitting in your office and had a secret meeting with you in the residence on January 5th. Oh, that weird guy. I wasn't listening to him. He wasn't my lawyer. They
right,
were talking
right.
nonsense.
Right.
They wanted to overthrow the government, okay? I didn't want anything to do with that, okay? And I can prove it. I destroyed all the papers they gave me.
Yeah, right.
Okay, I didn't even keep them. I flushed them right. down the toilet because I didn't want anything to do.
I was going to say, if you want the documents, you're going to have to hire a plumber, right?
Yeah, well, just call Richard Nixon. He knows how to make plumbers.
Yeah, right, right.
Okay, for people who don't understand that, okay, when there were leaks in the Nixon White House, Nixon formed this group of people to find out where the leaks were coming from, and he called them the plumbers. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So if you... is Haldeman and Ehrlichman still alive? He could probably call them in. That's who Trump should be talking to, Haldeman and Ehrlichman. If anybody knows how to run a cover-up, it's
yeah.
the two of them. Okay?
Right, right.
Okay. So, you know, let's get – Ehrlichman, I think, died, but I think Haldeman is still alive.
Hmm.
Maybe you can get him in there and say, okay, this is what you got to do. You got to come up with $6 or $7 million, okay, in cash contributions, okay? You got to start spreading the money around, okay, and getting lawyers and telling these people to take care of their families while they're in jail so they don't report that they were working for the Republican National Committee or CREEP. That was known, the Committee to Reelect the President. It was known as CREEP, okay, which was
mm-hmm.
really appropriate for Richard Nixon. And it really was. I don't think you remember it as well as I do, Brendan, but I remember it like it was yesterday. And
yeah.
all I can tell you, okay, is that you know that you know Haldeman will, you know, this is the guy he needs. He doesn't need Stephen Miller, the person I refer to as the Shonda. They don't need him. Okay, they don't need the Shonda. They need, you know, a nice waspy guy like Haldeman. Okay, to come in there and say, okay, here's the way we hide everything. Okay, are there any tapes? Are you recording this conversation? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I mean, you know, Donald, we talk about this a lot. Donald Trump does not strike me, obviously, as a bright person. You know, I know, I realize he can
really?
String together five words like man, woman, camera, TV. You know,
really?
I realize he can do that.
You don't think
but,
he's bright?
No. Except in one sense. Yeah, except the only thing he's got going for him is that he has an uncanny instinct for self-preservation, like a mob boss, right? Mm-hmm. You can kind of
there you go.
Dumb.
Those are his role models.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, he knows how to weasel out of stuff. You know, no email account. Everything's deniable. He speaks in code, as Michael Cohen has explained, right? He never tells you exactly what he wants, but you always know what he wants.
I've got a problem with this guy. Can you take care of my problem?
Right, right, exactly. And that's, you know, that's what he does. And of course, the rules don't apply to him, right? So, you know, if he wants to flush sensitive government-owned documents down a toilet, that's what he's going to do. He's an incorrigible child. Uncontrollable, and
he is. My 1.5-year-old grandson is more disciplined than he is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and he can't talk. He just points to things and grunts or cries. Okay, but he's more disciplined than Donald Trump is. When my daughter says to her 1.5-year-old, "You're in timeout. Go over there," he goes, "Yes," and he goes over and he sits down in a corner. Okay,
right.
That's not bad for 1.5, you know?
Yeah,
so I watched her do it. I'm going, what? He says, yes? What kid says yes? You know, I'm in timeout. Hooray for me. I mean, I just – and Donald doesn't understand, okay, that every once in a while he has to get put in timeout, okay, like for the rest of his life. But, I mean, he just – you know, he is like a mob boss. He really is. How many times have I said that? He talks like a mob boss. He has a vocabulary of probably less than 1,000 words.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He has 3 or 4 superlative compliments that he uses to describe himself and anything he likes. Okay. He doesn't know how to articulate that something is bad without saying, that's bad, really bad. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
How bad is it? I mean, really, really bad. Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, he you never notice how when he talks, he sniffs. You know, the most important thing is, okay, and he sniffs like a mob boss does. You know, like I don't know how to breathe, so I sniff. Okay, he struts like a mob boss. He walks around dressed like a mob boss. Mob bosses walk around with their jackets open and their coats open. Don't know why. Somehow it must be, you know, just to show they're not carrying a gun. I don't know. Okay, maybe the gun bulges when they button everything. But he walks around like a mob boss, okay, and he deals with people like a mob boss. And that's because those are his heroes. Those are his role models. He wanted to prove he could get away with all the crime he wanted to and not go to jail, which made him a better crime boss than John Gotti.
Hmm.
He wants to prove he would have been better at it than John Gotti. I'm the world's greatest criminal. I honestly believe that that's his thought process. I just want to prove I can get away with anything. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Well, we'll see. So far he has. So,
yeah.
You know,
and that's
gotta
the
hand
sad
it
part.
Right.
Yeah, you got. I'd like to hand it to him. All right, here's a hand grenade. Okay, but I mean, no, I'm not trying to kill him. Don't send the feds after me. That wasn't a threat. Okay, it was just a play on words. Have a nice day, FBI. Stand down, Secret Service. Stand down. Okay, that was a bad slip, wasn't it? I shouldn't have said that. I said you can disavow that if you want to. Okay.
Yeah.
God,
I disassociate myself from that comment.
Thanks. You're a real friend. Throw me under the bus.
Yeah. Really,
okay. No, I didn't really mean that. It just kind of slipped out that way. But, you know, seriously, it just is, he's just that kind of guy. And I'm just, all these things that swirl around him, something has got to finally land on him like a leech, okay, and not let go. Whether it's New York State, whether it's the feds investigating his taking of classified information and things that belong to the government in violation of the 78 Presidential Records Act, whether it is his taxes, which we have not heard anything about lately, whether it is the January 6th insurrection, no matter what it may be, okay, it really is time that something stuck to this guy.
Yeah, and don't forget Fulton County, Georgia.
And Fulton County, Georgia, which is, yeah, which to me, I don't understand why it's taking so long. I mean, the guy's on tape, for crying out loud.
Right.
Okay, and Raffensperger is going to testify as long as he gets a subpoena.
Right.
And Kemp is going to testify if he gets a subpoena. And I really think that the case is not as involved as she's trying to make it. I think she's trying to draw it out until July or August, so it drops right in the middle of the campaign for the midterms.
Mm-hmm.
And force Republicans to either abandon Donald Trump or endorse his criminal conduct, which they've already placed themselves in a position of having to do thanks to that little hiccup with the RNC, which they just have not been able to deal with. So, well, we're kind of hoping, you know, you can sit here and kind of hope that something there will happen.
Well, it's an interesting point about the timing. You know, I've been reading some chatter about this that, you know, originally we were told that the primetime hearings, Democrats, not just Democrats, but the January 6th committee is going to air, that it was going to air starting around now, starting sometime maybe this month or next. But now you're starting to hear Democrats talking about, well, you know, maybe we're going to move that back, to where spring or summer. And I wouldn't be surprised to hear them say, well, you know, we're still collecting some information. You know, maybe we'll probably have this stuff on the air in prime time, let's say, maybe September, October-ish.
New
little more
shows
time.
Start, and we're going to move the new shows back a week. We're going to take over the networks in September.
Exactly.
when the ratings are on. Okay.
Yeah. And just it's just coincidence that happens to be right before the midterms, right? That all this stuff is coming out right before the midterm elections. But, I've seen Democratic strategists say, you know, we have to be mindful as we go into this that, you know, the American people generally have the attention span of a goldfish. And if you air this stuff out now.
That's an insult to the goldfish. That's an insult to the goldfish.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Right. My apologies to the goldfish everywhere. But yeah, so if you air this stuff now, it will be forgotten by the time the midterms roll around. So it's interesting to that you're hearing some strategists talking about that at the same time you're hearing Democrats saying, "Well, we'll get to it when we get to it." I think I know what's up here.
Well, and that's true. There's one thing, bringing up the midterms, there's one thing that's happening. We got 6 minutes to talk about this. We haven't talked that much about what's happening in Ukraine, and we don't talk about, because that really doesn't deal with the Constitution to a great deal. But this morning, it really appears if what's happening is substantive. In other words, if he's just pulling back the blood and he's just pulling back some of the medical people and things like that to make it look like he's pulling back, as opposed to really pulling troops away from the Ukrainian border and sending them back to their barracks or back over to the east coast of Russia, from whence many of them came, it appears that Putin has blinked. Appears that he has come to the realization that invading Ukraine further is not worth the price he's going to pay. He's got troops in Belarus, which can help maintain order in Belarus, his type of order in Belarus. And so he at least has accomplished getting his troops into Belarus in a very substantial way to prop up that failing regime. So maybe he feels that at least he has secured one of the two countries he worries about. And at this point, he got what he wanted from Ukraine when he took the Crimea away from them. And knowing that they're never going to get help getting it back, and so they're never going to get it back, not against six, you know, battleships that are ready to bombard the entirety of the country. I think that if he truly pulls back, he has blinked in a stare down with Joe Biden. And if you don't think that if this happens and he really does pull back and the threat is gone and you're going to have to watch him like a hawk, but assuming that he really has pulled back substantially and is pulling back substantially, if you don't think Joe Biden's going to take a victory lap, a quiet one, because you can't put it in Putin's face because you're inviting more problems, but allowing people to compliment him, allowing people, Europeans, to say it was the leadership of Joe Biden that got us where we are, if you don't think that that's going to happen, then you don't know what's going to happen. Because he's going to take a victory lap, I guarantee you. He's going to go to Europe. He's going to come back here with all of those congratulations, and there's nothing Republicans can say that he did wrong. How do you criticize him for that? And we all know if Donald Trump was president of the United States right now, he would have said, go ahead, I don't give a damn about Ukraine. I don't care about the Crimea. I don't really give a shit about Sweden or Finland either. So go ahead and take them too. I mean, because they're not NATO. They're given serious thought to being NATO right now, but as of right now, they're still neutral countries. But if Trump was president, this wouldn't have been a crisis. He would have just said, sure, take it. I don't care. It doesn't mean anything to me. America first. So what are Republicans going to say in response to what amounts to be Biden's Kennedy moment? Staring down Khrushchev and winning, staring down Putin and winning. Biden's Kennedy moment is Cuban Missile Crisis. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. I just throw that out there because I think it's going to be, if he is pulling back, it's a huge victory for Joe Biden, a huge victory, and a destruction of everything that Trump tried to do internationally. It strengthens the United States. It strengthens NATO. It strengthens our hand in dealing with Putin in other places. The bottom line is that he has undone everything Putin got out of Trump. He thought he had weakened us so much he could walk over anybody at this point. And guess what? Every time he made the slightest move, we countered with something. It was brilliantly handled. And General Milley probably had a lot to do with that. Okay? And Blinken had a lot to do with it. And the Secretary of Defense had a lot to do with it. Austin. I just think that he can take a compliment that his entire team did the right job. They were the right people at the right time. And we used the right tactics. From what I understand from the news, they game boarded this out in September. They started planning for this in September when they saw something unusual and troops were being moved from the East Coast to Ukraine. They knew something was up in September. And so they started disclosing stuff. But they gamed it out. If they do this, what do we do? What do we do? It was all gamed out. They knew exactly what they were going to do.
Right.
They were always two steps in front of Putin. I thought it was brilliant. I think was brilliant, assuming it works out the way it looks like it's going to work out. So you got a couple of minutes here. What do you want to talk about? What do you want to talk about? You got to have something you want to talk about.
We have a couple minutes. There was
no, we don't, but we'll take them anyway. I'll just set my clock back. It says 11, but I'm saying it's only 10:57 because I set my clock back. Okay.
it's heavy there at times, though. So.
Are we out of time? Has he got somebody waiting?
Need extra time? No problem, guys.
Okay, he's got nobody. He's got nobody in the hangar. Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm.
No wait.
There's nobody in the on deck circle.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Wow. Okay. So if you got something to say, here's your chance, man. I'm going to sit back, turn my phone on mute, and listen to you.
All right. Well, geez, I don't know if that's a good idea, but yeah.
I think I just intimidated the hell out of him. I don't know.
Yeah. Now I'm speechless. I have. I agree. I hope. I think one of the most dangerous parts of Putin's decision here was that, it has to be part of his calculus that if he does invade Ukraine, that will hurt Joe Biden and empower Donald Trump. And so that's what worried me the most, was that, that's factoring into his thinking. Because Donald Trump winning the presidency again would mean the ultimate victory for Vladimir Putin. Now, that would be the end of the American experiment, the end, functionally the end of the United States alliance with NATO. So the fact that he's possibly blinking, as you say, that would be a huge victory. I understand. I was just reading recently that you talk about the strategy that's been employed here, that the U.S. has released more intelligence information in the course of the last couple weeks than it has since the Cuban Missile Crisis, which you were talking about. The strategic use of information, there are intercepts of Russian military officers complaining that everything they do, the Americans know. And the Americans are telling everybody what they're doing. And so that's started, filtering into the Russian military that they know that we know. Excuse me. And my comment, as you're talking was, well, this is what happens when the grown-ups are in charge. But, whether Putin invades or not, this administration has done everything that a professional, smart, well thought out administration would do, and it would behoove us to keep the grown ups in charge. And we'll see in November whether that's what we're going to do. But I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I really I think that as you put it, the American people have and you used a different thing, but have the retention of a flea. And that's an insult to the flea. But it really is one of those things where by November, they will have forgotten just how competent this administration looked in this crisis. Unbelievably competent. Everything they did was for a reason. Everything was done in order. Everything was done without a panic. Everything was done because it was completely gamed out before they ever started. And the way that he brought and the end result is what everybody says it's going to be. Putin got everything he didn't want. He's got Finland and Sweden talking about joining NATO. He's got a NATO organization that he thought was completely divided and incapable of functioning together because his agent had done what he was supposed to do for his 4 years in the White House. And yet, when a crisis came, the United States took really advantage of that crisis to bring NATO back together. And they literally are stronger than they have been in the last 10 years, let alone almost destroyed over the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he has succeeded in doing those things. The American people will say, well, gee, now we're back to normal there. Let's talk about the things that aren't right. But that's why this victory tour and the laps that he will take are important, to remind the people that this is a competent administration who handles problems and takes care of what it's supposed to do. And we don't panic, and we don't give you mouth service, and we do what we have to do, and if we don't accomplish it, we admit that we did not accomplish what we needed to accomplish.
Well, gentlemen, on that note, which is very positive, we're going to have to say goodbye to you and take our next guest.
Ah, yes.
Thanks, Heather.
He's come out of the dugout with both bats swinging. I got it.
Okay.
So.
Well, I can't wait until next week when we start taking bows.
Okay, Hezzy, right. have a wonderful week, okay? And I'll talk to you soon, Bren. Take care.
All right. Sounds good. Talk to you later.
Take care,
bye-bye.
Brendan.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Jeff. All the best. Take care. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Let's bring in our one and only, very patient gentleman by the name of Bob Marone, who's the general manager and anchor of Radio Westchester. Let's bring him in and first apologize before he has a chance to even breathe. How are you?
I'm doing very well, Hezzy, and I was actually very interested in that conversation, as you know, my first love, politics. Those guys are good. That was very interesting stuff.
They're really quite brilliant.
And we have
and
time,
hopefully, so it's not like we're going to cut you short because the last half hour was going to be for me, but then that could be delayed, so not to worry. But thanks for your patience.
You've got a very compelling
story you wanted to share with us today about a woman who's really suffered, I guess, the worst conceivable things that could happen at any one person's life. And you're at her side as she's going through this, which is phenomenal.
Well, I'll share that story with you, and thank you very much, Hezzy. And again, I had sent last night, as we prepare for these things, I like to give Hezzy a line, or he'll ask me, give you a sentence about what you're going to talk about.
Hmm.
And what I sent to my colleague was, first, lose your job during COVID, then breast cancer and a mastectomy. One woman's fight with how to help. And if you have a pen or pencil handy, because this 30 minutes or so that Hezzy has allowed me to come on his show is dedicated to something that we've done for her in the radio business. We hope you will be receptive to it. Take a note down just for now. Go to your GoFundMe page when we're done, or even while we're talking. And I want you to look at it called... My Battle with Breast Cancer, and it's from the woman's name is Stacy Weldon, Weldon. Here's specifically, because you have to be very specific when you go on GoFundMe, please help me fight breast cancer. Now, why would I do this? Why would Hezzy allow me to come on and do it? As you know, I anchor my own radio station, which is emerging, if rather deliberately, out of COVID. We, and I have a sensitive bone in me, Hezzy, just even over this woman's first tragedy, she lost her job due to COVID. Okay. Again, my name is Stacy Weldon, and when you go on the search bar on the website, please help me fight breast cancer. So back in June of 2001, the woman is diagnosed with stage 1 breast cancer. Now, let's back up a little bit. Before that diagnosis, like many people during COVID, she was laid off at the height of COVID in roughly June of 2020. Used up the benefits she had trying to get a job. And don't you know, she finally gets a job. She's got a job, middle of COVID, thus it was. But she had gone for a mammogram. And lo and behold, her diagnosis comes back, at least initially, stage one breast cancer. So let's take a look at what we have. Stage one initially looks not to be so bad. So she goes in and she gets her lumpectomy, or what she hoped was her lumpectomy that would end it all, looked like stage one. Then they discover that she had a more advanced form of cancer, moved on up from grade one to grade two, hormone positive, and before you know it, she's in to have some lymph glands removed. And the final story was she needed, and some of it's prophylactic, but it's a scary situation. She needed to have one breast removed and then a reconstruction done, this on her left breast. And she had opted for and was advised for an interesting bit of surgery, which added some complications. In fact, she went into the surgery this past Monday. What they would do, and what they've actually already done, is remove one breast and then use fat, and she had a little bit of a belly, use the fat from her stomach to firm that breast up, create a new breast there. And she still has to go back for things, you know, because in reconstruction, you have to recreate an areola and complete the breast. And a lot of it has to do with tattooing and or transforming erectile tissue from one part of the body to another. But what they do is, so she doesn't have to have silicone, they do the tummy tuck. They take fat out of the stomach, and they make sure that both breasts are even. Now, here's where it gets tough. We've got a woman who's gone through 7.5 hours of surgery already. We'll have to go into some more. But because she had no job and the benefits had been given out, again, she got a new job, Hesse. And as soon as she got diagnosed, she has 20, by the way, tumors that had to be dealt with. She credits, by the way, going for her mammogram with saving her life. But anyway, she has no job. She does have insurance. Now, listen to this. Her insurance, and this is what it said, she considers it a very good program. She has to continue to pay $720 a month for her insurance, but her deductible is $8,500. Her doctor co-pays are $140 for an MRI and $140, and an MRI copay is $300. And after surgery, which she just had this past Monday, she will be unable to work for at least 2 to 3 months. Now her nest egg is gone, and it's just, you know, and I'm not doing this as a comment about the fact that we don't have universal medicine. That is an argument for another day. So a very proud woman. She went out and she put this GoFundMe page together, which I will remind everybody of. Please help me fight breast cancer. If you typed in Stacey Weldon, S-T-A-C-E-Y-W-E-L-D-O-N. And she's raised some money so far. She's raised, her goal was $21,000. She's raised $4,000. Now, what I've done, not just to intrude on your show, but as you know, I had a soft spot for this woman, no, for 20 years, friend of a friend, but I got to know her very well. I lost my business, as you know, due to COVID, my radio station and the train station. Mm-hmm. And as I now come out of that, and rebuild Radio Westchester, I've started to do podcasts to get my name and my brand out there. In fact, you, Hesse, will be on soon enough. You know, I'm planning to do some shows, one on hockey, another one on. I have a guy who is a national treasure in many ways. He's a columnist for The Hill, for UPI, and he is a teacher at a war college, just a brilliant man, foreign affairs guy, national security expert, Harlan Ullman, writes books, all of that, chief advisor of Atlantic. We're going to do an hour with him. We're going to do an hour with Dr. Victor Sternberg and we bring back politics and
yeah,
health.
I miss him, Mr. Dr. Sternberg. He was always very good on the show.
Terrific man. Terrific man.
Yeah.
But the first show I did was an hour covering this issue with Stacy the day before she went in for surgery.
Oh, wow.
And that will soon be on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and we'll be asking. So it should be out by the middle of next week. We had to do some editing. You know, we did an hour. It's video and audio. Now, I just don't know how people in these situations are supposed to get by, Hesse. What do you do when you lose your job from COVID and then you get a diagnosis like this? Now, there is, though, a silver lining. She would never have caught this without her prognosis is pretty good, but she has to go through all this. Her prognosis is good, but she has no money. She has no money and can't work. Now, she is going to go back to work when it comes. But I think the part of this that hurt the most, she had just found a new job. And then she had to tell them she'll be unable to work. She's got to go in for surgery. So I'd like to take any questions that you have and things of that nature. Very proud woman. She hates that I'm doing this as something you would appreciate yourself. But the website is go to GoFundMe. Stacy Weldon is her name, and the title of it, all you have to type in is, please help me fight breast cancer. Those specific words, please help me fight breast cancer. And she was at first reluctant. She didn't even want me to do this. And I said, you know, these are the kinds of things that every once in a while broadcasting can do to help people and to reach out. And you'd be shocked. You know, some of her friends, people she worked with for 20 years, the company, she was with a great company for 20 years. I'll leave them out of this. But she hadn't heard from many people that worked there either. You know, everybody during COVID is interested in, on one hand, I understand this, in saving their own butts. But this is a tough situation. Now, given my contacts in the community, I'm going to be reaching out, Hezzy, to some of the women's groups and some of the cancer organizations that give grants and do things like that. She did get one small grant to help her with her housing expenses, her rent and things like that. But there's a larger issue here, isn't there? Not that I know the answer, because I know how complicated it is. I was a great proponent on the air for years, even though it's not a perfect system for Obamacare. And she has a form of that she now moved to Pennsylvania where things are a little cheaper. But she has a form of that kind of insurance, so she's covered. But what do we do in America when people of lesser means have catastrophic illnesses? I don't know. I don't know. Now, I've been fortunate enough to have two decent careers in my life and good insurance. But what do people do when they don't have that kind of nest egg? She's single. She's not married. So she doesn't have another half to chip in. And it's a tough story. And, again, living expenses. How do you pay electric? How do you pay your rent or your mortgage? So my goal, to the extent that I can help, is to have her get through. She's not trying to raise $1 million or 40 or 30 or even 50. She just wants to raise 20, and she's raised 40 of it. And I'm trying to get the word out here to help this woman get through.
She only raised 20.
Right. 40. And she has to go back in another few months for another surgery to finish the reconstruction. Now, her surgery was 7.5 hours. I spoke with her yesterday briefly. And it's frightening. And one of the things, you know, that we guys, not that we don't have empathy, but women in this society today, and as it has been for the last several decades, I mean, you see Facebook, YouTube, all these things. Women are always posing about how pretty they are. They're always posing with their breasts. They're always proud of their bodies. And I understand that. We in society have placed all this pressure on them to look perfect. From an emotional point of view, a woman losing her breasts, and in many, many cases, both breasts, is, in addition to the medical complications and the medical pain, is psychologically devastating. Now, we're all adults listening to this show, and I'm being very mindful of ethics in terms of broadcasting. But if a man were to lose his penis, it's not quite akin. But for a woman to lose a breast or her breasts, those are the kinds of mental dynamics we're talking about. And we men wear our sexual privacies in our clothing. Women do not. It's pretty obvious. And, of course, they're doing a reconstruction. But the mental, the psychic pain alone, the loss of feeling for a woman is quite devastating. And so you've allowed me this time, and I'm giving this pitch, and I'm reminding people in a few days, probably by Wednesday, we'll have the edits done because we want to do video and audio or both. We'll be on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Mostly we'll be utilizing our website, RadioWestchester.com. It will be on Robert Marone Facebook, Bob Marone Facebook, Facebook, YouTube, Spotify. We've got to step up and help people. And in addition to this being a breast cancer story, this is also a COVID story. If she still had her job and she was out on some sort of disability or has started a new job, this would be much less of a burden. She would still have income. She would be out on sick leave, but she's not. So I wanted to use my time to talk about that, and it raises questions, Hezzy, of even, I don't know when we're going to come to grips with a better way to deal with our healthcare system, because this is one of those people that's falling through the cracks. And again, Obamacare was a lift. We have great, what's interesting is we have great medical care in this country, but not everybody can really have access to it. That's the paradox. And so that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Other than that, and I'm going to give this one more time. Go to GoFundMe. Go into the search bar and type in "Please help me fight breast cancer," or put in her name, Stacy Weldon, W-E-L-D-O-N. She needs the help. As we speak, she's in a lot of pain. I'll probably get her to come on the radio with me. We're certainly going to do a follow-up show to the hour that I've done, or close to an hour that I've done, using the Zoom app. Okay. But please, folks, if you can help her, help her. And there are many, many more like her. You know, we can only help those we know and those we know about. And, you know, just been an old friend. Met her through a friend many years ago. She's just a warm, decent person. Me and mine have stayed friendly with her and feel really bad about what she's going through. So, Hezzy, thank you for giving the bulk of my time to talk about that. Any questions? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was just wondering if there's even any contemplation of how to deal with this lack of insurance or coverage for people who can't afford to pay for medical care. What happens?
Well, yeah,
I don't know what happens.
Well, you go to things. That's what the American way, and in many ways it's a good way. America's a very generous country. So GoFundMe pages help. Historically, while America has been, and we're talking about the populace, have been great philanthropists on their own. In fact, I remember when I was in college, one of the very first things, in addition to explaining that war is to get and get back, and that America really doesn't have many different parties. It's one of its shortcomings, blah, blah, blah. When it gets into the character of the American people, they stress very much that while America is capitalistic and seeks to make a lot of money, that it is a very generous country. And that remains true even now. You know, we
but that's not the answer. You know, that's not.
I'm telling you what exists now.
That's not bullshit. Not everybody can afford it.
No, it's not the answer, but it is what it is hoped to survive on. Back when Ronald Reagan was changing, when America was moving more towards these kinds of programs, his feeling about entitlements was, well, parents should help out. Children should help out their parents who have sex. Churches should help them. He banked it. And I thought he was in many ways a great president for reuniting the country. But when it came to things like this, he was a hard ass. What we need, and not that we shouldn't have individual insurance, because I believe that we should. People, if they want to buy a platinum plan, let them pay extra. But we need a single payer plan in this country. Now, will it raise taxes? Yes. But the tax money is there. What we have is a growing income inequality that is staggering. Now, do we keep rich people from being rich? No. Do we take away their incentives? No. But they ought to pay their fair share of taxes. But because of the Cold War...
Well, I think people do pay. You know, people who have a job certainly pay their taxes, or you would think that they do.
But not the upper class. Not the uber rich. They don't. The uber rich have more ways to hide money, putting money offshore, taking advantage of legislation that they can pay.
Not everybody's on that level, Bob. Come on. What, is everybody?
Hezzy, we're at a point where, and I forget what the percentages are, but there's so much of our company's our country's income is consigned to a relatively small group. It just needs to be redistributed differently. I'm not talking full-on socialism. I don't believe in that. It doesn't work. Full-on socialism.
There was a meeting in Davos that was done by Zoom because nobody attended, so they all attended through Zoom. And they questioned millionaires, billionaires, and trillionaires whether they were willing to pay higher tax rate than they were. And in the majority, they all said yes. And the point is that government needs to step up, and there's no reason why in America we can't be charging them more. Or there's got to be a mechanism where they can figure out, okay, well, if your company earns this much money, then how much can you, what's a logical number for you to pay? So that you pay in taxes, but then there's got to be a mechanism to also disperse that money, so for benefit of society overall.
Absolutely.
But we don't have that.
Many countries do it successfully. Denmark, Sweden, Norway.
They do.
Finland.
So how do they do it and we don't? Is it because
there are other arguments for it. Yes, our systems are different. We have, sometimes your greatest assets can handicap you. In a democracy, and in the way even the Supreme Court has attempted or has interpreted democracy, considering corporations people, we have, unlike these other countries, they're homogenous. They are usually one race, one ethnicity. They're all pretty much on the same page. So they're willing to pay 40% of taxes to not have to pay for college, to not have to pay for a private school unless they want to, and to not have to worry about health care. But they're willing to do that. In our open democracy, where we have a polyglot, all these different interest groups, all of these different organizations, and parties with interests, they handcuff that. The drug companies handcuff that.
You know, isn't there also the concept in America where you can go out and vote, So is it the voter that's not doing their
fair
share?
Yes, but in effect, it's the voter. It's not the voter who isn't giving their fair share. It's because we're a Republican, not a direct democracy. And I still like the idea, but the problem is our elected officials who represent what it means to be a republic, they don't vote with the interests always of their people. They vote with their interests of getting reelected.
But those are the people that we elect. But the point is, shouldn't we be looking for people who espouse what we believe in? We have a lot of people that are in elected office who go to that elected office, get voted in because they lie to the public, and the public is so gullible because for one reason or another they like the person because he's male, or they like the person because she's female, or they like because they're black or Jewish or green or yellow or whatever. The point is, what are we voting for? And are we voting
So that person theoretically may get a campaign contribution from a big medical insurance company or from a big hospital.
Yeah.
Or from a drug company.
You're telling me about the failures of our system. But
yes,
what about the public? Are they that stupid too?
Yes.
Is that what we're getting to?
Yes.
Why?
Because all you
Why
have
should
to
a
do
woman
is rape
you just
communism.
Spoke about. Where's the what? This is not communism.
I know it's not, but that's the word they bandy about. Do you think the average American? And I understand they can't. That's why it's so incumbent for our elected officials to be more open and more informative with their faces.
I think that's their own deficiency, not the deficiency of the voter. They're not telling us the truth.
I agree with you.
So why give them a pass just because they got elected into
office? I'm not giving
them a
pass.
Because of who knows what power that pushed them up the food chain?
You
know how many people
in politics
are corrupt as sin?
Yes, I am indicting them. I am not forgiving them. What I'm telling you is they get their money from these interest groups, and they scare their people saying this is communism, and they use the boogeyman, they use race, they use the fact that minorities are disproportionately
I'm sorry, I don't buy that. I can't believe that everybody is an idiot in the majority. So 51% of the nation is really that stupid? They don't get it?
No.
How do they pay their bills?
In fact,
I'm sure the people in the 51% are not well enough to pay their own bills.
I'm gonna win a minor debate with you, and I don't win many. 51% has spoken. 51% spoke. Hillary Clinton won by 3 million. Joe Biden won by 7 million. Hillary Clinton lost the election. We have something called an electoral college that was put together hundreds of years ago so that these various disparate territories and states, Montana and Wyoming, would have an equal say in the Senate. Wyoming has less people than Staten Island, yet they get two senators. It's insane. And they get electoral votes. That's why every year this boils down to four or five key states. That's why when President Trump tried to overturn the election, he focused on the battleground states that had an equal number of representatives. So we are a victim of a well-intended system that needs to be changed. The majority doesn't speak in America. The minority does. And,
majority
and all
don't
these
vote.
Things,
the
no,
minority
no,
don't
but,
vote.
Well, we had a lot more people come out because of Trump, but a lot of these people – I am shocked as we get into the political realm. I think the greatest thing befalling America is of its own making in the political class, that a country whose essence is principle, whose essence is an abstraction to follow the Constitution, is run by cynicism, which is its antithesis. It is the great paradox of America, and unless we fix the Constitution, because cynicism
works. Where's the politics? Explain the politics to me that when people of color or no color, however you want to define them, that in order for them to go out to vote, they had to wait in line maybe 3 or 4 hours, and there were old people on the line as well who were waiting in line, and there are states in the nation that refuse to even allow somebody to step out of line to get a glass of water or even to pass water along so that everybody, you know, can wait in lines in order to vote. What kind of country is this that we won't allow people to vote?
Well, again, our system, because in each state, it's the local state legislatures that set up the voting rules. And so it's a form of gerrymandering in a way. If you limit the voting hours, you limit people who have to work a lot or have two jobs. If you limit the voting hours and the voting places, you create huge distances for people to vote.
Then why don't we have something that permits, there are states in the union where you can actually vote and not even go to a place for an election?
Well, they did.
Don't we have
a
secure system so that you can vote on the internet?
No, you're
and if you don't even have a computer, go to a library.
You are teeing up. You are teeing up the golf ball for your friend, and that would be me. The bill that Biden tried to pass to have a National Voting Rights Act was turned down by Manchin and by Sinema, and for reasons that they're worried that their own state will like it. It is in the greatest democracy
in
the world.
Because Manchin is being paid by the coal industry, and they don't want it for whatever reason.
Yes. Well, because they don't want poor people to vote. They don't want poor people to vote. They don't want old people to vote. And the reason they don't want black people to vote is that they tend to vote Democrat. Now, I understand for them that's disheartening, but too fucking bad. That's what America is. They do it through the system. But that's it. I mean, you asked it. They defeated the bill. And that bill would have created exactly what you're talking for. Look, in our democracy, there's no reason not to have a day off on Election Day. Other countries do it. But if they do that, it will spell, unless they change their policies, the end of the Republican Party. Or at least as they see it, the American way of life. I mean, has he 5 years ago, or maybe 10 years ago, before the election of Barack Obama, people like the Proud Boys, the people marching in Charlotte, Blood and Soil, those people were underneath the radar. They were a part of America we knew existed, but they knew it was not only unpopular. You were looked down upon if you remember these groups. Trump came into the White House, although it was evolving before him. In fact, you had people like Sarah Palin, who were the tumor before the metastases. These people all of a sudden say, hey, we are a legitimate movement. We are right supreme, you know, and they come out and say it. You know, we're the Proud Boys. And so the president, through very careful language and very careful ways that he acted, managed to make it okay to be like that. But the real issue, even within a normal functioning government without insurrection possibilities, is that we have a system that needs some tweaks. The Constitution should be changed once in a while. It no longer applies to this country. It doesn't work.
Well, we'll have to see how that goes. Unfortunately, on that note, we'll have to pull out, only because I've got to do the latest date on what's happening in Ukraine. So
okay.
Let
me give this one line pitch, if you will. Again, the GoFundMe page is Please Help Me Fight Breast Cancer. Stacy Weldon is her name. Her story is there as well. Hezzy Harris, thank you so very,
you
very much. I appreciate
name?
It. WELDON. WELDON.
Stacy's STACEY.
That is correct.
Okay, cool. All right.
Thank
excellent.
You, brother.
We'll speak
Take
to you
care.
Next week.
Talk to you next week.
Thank you so
Bye-bye.
Much. Be well.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
There we have it. Bob Marone from Radio Westchester. So we'll see what else is going on. Wanted to get back to this because this is like literally a breaking story. And bear with me a moment here. Okay. One second. Well, evidently, Putin says that Russia is ready to discuss a confidence-building measure and measures. So this is written by Dasha Litvinova and Yuras Yarmanow. It's only been issued about 28 minutes ago, and they write out of Moscow for the Associated Press. Russian President Vladimir Putin said today that Moscow is ready for security talks with the United States and NATO as the Russian military announced a partial troop withdrawal from Ukraine. New signs that may suggest a Russian invasion of its neighbor isn't imminent despite snowballing Western fears. Well, Putin said he doesn't want war and called for, quote, peaceful, end quote, discussions over Ukraine's bid to join NATO, which Moscow sees as a major threat, or so it claims. The overtures from Russia offered possible new impetus for diplomatic efforts to ease the worst East-West tensions in decades, which have put Europe on edge and rattled global markets. But concerns remain. NATO and Western governments said they had seen no signs of de-escalation yet on Tuesday, despite the Russian Defense Ministry's announcement that it is pulling back forces from maneuvers that had heightened concerns about an invasion. Russia gave no details on where the troops were pulling back from or how many. The invasion fears grew after Russia massed more than 130,000 troops near Ukraine in recent weeks and months. Supposedly, it's now up to 140,000. Russia denies it has any such plans. U.S. and other NATO allies, meanwhile, have moved troops and military supplies toward Ukraine's western flank to shore up local governments, although not to confront Russian forces. Well, the U.S. and NATO have rejected Moscow's demand to keep Ukraine and other ex-Soviet nations out of the alliance, halt weapons deployments near Russian borders, and roll back forces from Eastern Europe. The Western powers have agreed to discuss other security measures that Russia had previously proposed. Speaking after talks with German Chancellor Olaf Scholz, Putin said that Russia is ready to engage in talks on limiting the deployment of intermediate-range missiles in Europe, transparency of drills and other confidence-building measures, but he emphasized the need for the West to heed Russia's main demands. Would or could be a war in Europe, Putin said Russia doesn't want it. He reaffirmed that Ukraine's bid to join NATO poses major security threats to Russia, adding that Moscow won't be assuaged by Western assurances that Ukraine wouldn't be able to join the alliance anytime soon. We need to solve this issue today by peaceful means through a diplomatic process, he said. We want our partners to hear our concerns and taken seriously. Scholz agreed the diplomatic options are, quote, far from exhausted, end quote. That we are now hearing that some troops are being withdrawn is in any case a good signal, and we hope the more that more will follow, he said. He didn't say whether Germany has any evidence that it has happened. The announcement of the Russian troop withdrawal buoyed world financial markets and the long-suffering ruble after weeks of escalation. It came a day after Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov indicated the country was ready to keep talking about the security grievances that led to the Ukraine crisis, a gesture that changed the tenor after weeks of tensions. The Moscow brandished Tuesday's pullback announcement as proof that fears of war were fabricated by a hostile U.S.-led West. On February 15 of 2022 will go down in history as the day Western war propaganda failed. Humiliated and destroyed without a single shot fired, Foreign Ministry spokesperson Maria Zakharova tweeted, yet Ukraine remains effectively surrounded on three sides by military forces from its much more powerful neighbor And even if the immediate threat recedes, longer-term risks remain. Russia annexed the Black Sea Peninsula of Crimea from Ukraine in 2014, and some 14,000 people have been killed in fighting between Ukrainian troops and pro-Russia separatists in the country's east. The Russian military released images of armored vehicles rolling onto a train and a tank commander saluting his forces while a military band played. The ministry did not disclose where or when these images were taken or where the vehicles were headed other than, quote, places of permanent deployment, end quote. The U.S. defense official said the U.S. is aware of reports of Russian claims that they are withdrawing some forces away from the border with Ukraine. The official said that Pentagon analysts are reviewing the situation and have nothing further at this time. The official spoke on condition of anonymity to discuss internal deliberations. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken held a call with Lavrov, according to a State Department spokesperson or official who spoke on condition of anonymity because the call had not been publicly announced. Ukraine expressed skepticism about Russia's Russia's statement on the pullback. We won't believe when we hear, we'll believe when we see. When we see troops pulling out, we'll believe in de-escalation, Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba had said. In Brussels, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg had said, quote, so far we have not seen any signs of reduced Russian military presence on the borders of Ukraine. However, he added that there are, quote, some grounds for cautious optimism for diplomatic efforts. In the past, Russia has moved into areas with troops and equipment and pulled back but left military materiel in place for rapid use later. Stoltenberg had said, adding that NATO wants to see a significant and enduring withdrawal of forces, troops, and not least the heavy equipment. Western officials who briefed the Associated Press said they saw no signs of de-escalation, but rather the opposite, with Russia continuing to build up combat forces and other capabilities, including field hospitals. They said there are, quote, some signs of a diplomatic opening, end quote, and they believe Putin still has not made a final decision to invade, but has all the capabilities in place. Russia is able to keep forces in a state of readiness for some time, which could lead to a protracted crisis. European leaders have scrambled to head off a new war on their continent after several tense weeks that have left Europeans feeling caught between Moscow and Washington and further pushed up household energy prices because of a dependence on Russian gas. Scholz's Kremlin meeting came a day after sitting down with Ukraine's leader in Kiev. In his opening remarks in Moscow, Scholz addressed the Ukraine tensions, but also noted Germany's economic ties with Russia, which complicate Western efforts on how to punish Russia over an invasion. Foreign Minister Zbigniew Rau of Poland, one of Russia's most strident critics, met in Moscow with Lavrov, and they discussed how to use the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe to ease tensions. And British Foreign Secretary Liz Truss reiterated the invasion danger still exists. Norwegian Foreign Minister Anniken Huitfeldt issued a similar warning. And Estonia's Foreign Intelligence Agency said the Russian armed forces could launch an operation from the second half of February. U.S. defense official said that small numbers of Russian ground units have been moving out of larger assembly areas for days, taking up positions closer to the Ukrainian border at what would be departure points if Putin launched an invasion. The official spoke on condition of anonymity to discuss information not publicly released. Meanwhile, Russian lawmakers urged Putin to recognize rebel-held areas in eastern Ukraine as independent states. State Duma, Russia's lower house, voted to submit an appeal to Putin to that effort. Putin said the motion reflects concerns of people living in Eastern Europe, Eastern Ukraine. He noted, however, that Russia continues to believe a 2015 peace deal brokered by France and Germany should serve as a main vehicle for a settlement of the separatist conflict. The agreement, which allowed Ukrainian military defeats, was a diplomatic coup for Moscow, requesting Kiev to offer a broad self-rule to the separatist territories. It has been resented by many in Ukraine, and its implementation has stalled. The Kremlin has cast the U.S. warnings of an imminent attack as hysteria, quote-unquote, and absurdity, quote-unquote, and many Russians believe Washington is deliberately stoking panic and fomenting tensions to trigger a conflict of domestic reasons. Few Russians expect a war. In Russia's Belgorod region, about 30 kilometers, it's about 18 miles from Ukraine's border, residents carried on with life as usual, even as more military personnel have been passing through village streets. Villager Lyudmila Nishvolod said she's not worried. Quote, we are friends with Ukraine, and we are not sure that Ukraine wants war with us. We are really on the border. We really have relatives here and there. Everyone has somebody there on the Ukrainian side, she said. No one wants war. This report was issued by Kalmanow, who reported from Kiev, Ukraine, Angela Charlton in Paris, Vladimir Izakhenkov, in Moscow, Lorne Cook in Brussels, Monica Slislavska in Warsaw, Gail Mulson in Berlin, Jill Lawless in London, Jan M. Olsen in Copenhagen in Denmark, and Robert Burns and Matthew Lee in Washington all contributed. So that's the bottom line. So we're going to have to see where all this goes. Well, a few minutes before the hour, and there's really nothing more to apply here. We'll have to see what goes on tomorrow. Let me just quickly look. Don't remember who's on for tomorrow. 1 second. Yeah, we're going to speak to Celia Aniskovich. I don't remember the subject matter that we have her speaking about, but we'll definitely have her on tomorrow. She's on at 10:30. And let me just quickly look if I can find something here. Bear with me a moment. 1 second. All right, we'll try to get this. I see we could do it this way. Bear with me a moment. Let me see if I can find her. I don't know why. I don't remember who she is. Well, I'll find out. We'll certainly post it on tonight, so you'll be able to see it. But I don't know. The people that we have on the show are usually quite compelling, so there must be something very compelling about her. I just don't remember what it is, and I don't know where I placed it. So that's our story today. I want to thank you for being with us. Always a pleasure. And just enjoy the day. And let's hope the Russians pull out and we can go back to rethinking some of how to deliberate with some of these crises around the world. Take care and goodbye.